This is the Bridge of the Faithful podcast, featuring your host, Jenna Erlandson.
Hey guys, and welcome to the Bridge of the Faithful podcast. I'm Jenna, and we are all on this faithful bridge together. These episodes are just my documentation of the things that God is showing me as I search to know what faithfulness really means. You can find this and all other episodes at botfpodcast.com. You can also connect with me at facebook.com/botfpodcast or email info@botfpodcast.com. And today we are here with Leonor Ortega Till, also known as Jeff the Girl from Five Iron Frenzy. And I honestly was so excited about this interview that I couldn't sleep last night.
That's exciting. Yeah, this is gonna be fun.
So obviously those of you who know me know that my daughter's name is also Leonor, and that is not an accident. And this band that she's in, Five Iron Frenzy, which I'm assuming most people know if they're listening to my podcast, it's just been a special band to me. So I feel extremely honored that she was willing to come on here and chat with me about creativity and being in God's image.
Definitely. It's been really fun. Although I am stuck at home for the stay-at-home time, it's been fun to be able to be on so many podcasts. And I love how every podcast has its own style.
How many have you done now?
I think maybe four, maybe five. Wow. I have my own too. So I've been a guest on a few different ones. And this one I really like. I've been listening to your podcast and I love how thorough it is and how interesting it is. So I'm really looking forward to this.
Well, thank you. So when we get the show notes and stuff out, we'll put a link to your podcast too.
Sounds good.
Awesome other things to listen to. So we're in this series talking about being created in God's image, and therefore he created us to be creative, and all the ways I can add creative into a sentence.
There you go.
So how did you learn about your talent in music?
So in the beginning, my mom was going to college when I was a little girl. And so I was at home with my dad in the evenings after he got off of work, and we had a music room in our house. We had a room that had a piano and trumpet, saxophone, all these different percussion instruments, and we would jam all the time. Usually we'd rock out to Motown music, and that's kind of where my love of music started. But then when I got into high school, I heard about and found out about punk music, and that got me really hooked. And I found out punk was a good place for energy, aggression, frustration with the status quo. And I began to find other bands and Christian bands that would share the message of unity and equality. And yeah, started going to a bunch of punk Christian shows and really found my community there.
So how did you get into your band, Five Iron Frenzy?
I was the weird punk rock girl backstage at shows. And Micah Ortega, who is a rhythm guitar player of Five Iron Frenzy, he is my second cousin. And so I'd go to all of his shows to support him. And I met the guys in Five Iron. They were kind of my friends. I'd always be backstage to pray and hang out with bands. And I remember they were saying they were going to start a side project of their metal band called Five Iron Frenzy. And it was going to be ska. And I knew a little bit about ska, and I played saxophone in high school marching band. And they asked me to be in the band, and they didn't even really do a proper audition or anything. I just said, yeah, I love the Lord and I can play. And they said, if you love the Lord and you can play, you can be in our band. And it was super simple.
That's awesome.
Yeah, pretty much.
So your role in the creative part of Five Iron, and then you also had a side project, didn't you?
Yeah, I've been in a few different side projects. With Five Iron, I write lyrics sometimes. Basically, the way lyrics work is, if Reese can't come up with any words for something, then he gives the song to me, which is good and bad. but it's cool. Yeah, basically, when Reese can't come up with lyrics for a song, he gives them to me. And that usually means that I get an opportunity. Sometimes it just means I'll write words and they won't be as good as whatever they inspire Reese to write. So he'll come up with something actually better and then mine won't get used. But every once in a while, the melody and the lyrics that I write do get chosen. And that, it is a lot of pressure, but it's also a lot of fun. And so the hard part is finding, I really think of it almost like a miracle when you can find music and lyrics that fit the taste of eight people. That's borderline miracle stuff.
Yeah. What does it feel like when you get inspiration?
For me, it feels like energy and positivity. I do love using my voice, but like you said, it is a lot of pressure to write songs. And there's been songs in the past that I wrote and we put out. And at the time we were just a, you know, a dinky little basement band. And I didn't know thousands of people would hear these songs. So now when I get inspiration, I also have to check myself as far as, is it accessible to a lot of people? Is it going to glorify the Lord? Does it also have that same spirit that I feel with Five Iron Frenzy, which is challenging the status quo and making the world a better place? And then the last part is always a little bit of vulnerability, because even though I create something and I do feel somewhat like an artist, I also have to share it with seven other people that have to agree. And so just because I personally feel very strong and convicted about something doesn't mean everybody's going to feel the same. So you kind of have to hold your art with a lot of flexibility, a lot of trust, and a lot of vulnerability.
Do you have a favorite song?
Probably All of It Is Good. That's a song that I got to write. I wrote the lyrics and the melody, the vocal melody. And that was a cool one because I wanted to write lyrics that were cryptic, that you couldn't easily say what it was about, because Reese tends to write very, his lyrics are very metaphorical, but also pretty black and white. And I'd been listening to a lot of punk rock music that was very cryptic. And so I wrote, you know, more deeply metaphorical. And I was saying in the studio the way that I wanted the melody to go. And Masaki, our producer at the time, kept it and told Reese, no, you have to do it like she did. And so it almost has a feminine quality, like it's like, alert the press, their dogmas are a mess. And it's kind of sing-songy, different than Reese would do. And Masaki kept it the way I sang it and made and had Reese do it that way. And I thought it was pretty powerful stuff. I like how it turned out, and I've gotten a lot of really good feedback about it.
Are you working on new music?
Yeah, we're kind of always working on new music. Scott is a writing machine, and that's, you had asked about my side project. The reason we started our band, The Fast Feeling, was because Scott just writes so many songs. And he had sent Reese a ton of them, and Reese wrote back with replies, rad, not rad, rad. He didn't really offer a lot of information. And we took all of the not rad songs and we made them new wave. And I wrote vocals. And Andy Verdecchio, who's the Five Iron drummer, jumped in on that project too and helped with the lyrics and also played drums. And so that is like a new wave band. But yeah, we're pretty much always writing songs, because once you start and once you use that muscle, you always feel inspired. So you really can't stop.
That's a really cool taking. So did you take the songs that he had and kind of revamp them, remake them new?
Yeah, definitely. We put a lot of computer programs on them and different sounds and changed them to be very much like synthwave, synth pop. It sounds almost 80s. And then as far as my vocals, there are some effects on my vocals. So it sounds sometimes robotic, sometimes like Blondie, better than I can sing in real life. So it is, it's not just... it's not raw, put it that way. It is hyper, hyper produced, which is cool. The only hard part about that is you can't really reproduce that live. So we decided just to be a studio album. And I'm totally happy with that.
So what are some barriers for your creativity?
The biggest one is the different belief that people have that a song or a lyric or a piece of art can be right or wrong. I don't really believe that. I feel that a piece of art is a choose your own adventure. It can go several different ways. I think you could use one lyric or another lyric. You could use one guitar solo or another one. But some people have a box that they view art and music in. And so they're like, that's not the right part for this song. That's not the right, you know, tone or whatever. And you can get stuck if you don't all have the same philosophy. And so it's really challenging to be in a team and to be in a band of eight. I mean, ska bands are huge. So eight people all having to come to the same, you know, agreement about lyrics and music and tones. And so it's a barrier because a song only has so much space and we have eight different instruments that want to be heard. So it's a challenge. But the cool thing about that is that it makes you grow. It really is part of a Christ-like situation. You have to be in community. You have to let down your guard. You have to let go of your rights. We came up with a saying, which is whatever's best for the song. The song comes first, not the person's feelings. And so there's several times that my feelings were hurt, or I can get emotional or feel frustrated with the way a song lyric goes, but it's about what's best for the song and trusting that process.
Is it hard to watch other people interpret your lyrics or your work in general?
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. It is. And it's hard because you don't want to tell people they're right or wrong, because again, I don't believe right or wrong. I feel like if you feel inspired to believe a certain way about a certain lyric, or it's helpful to think about something, go for it. It's not my job to analyze the music for you. And so similarly, there's a lot of bands. So for me, I didn't grow up with Christian music. So I took a lot of bands that were secular and I made their lyrics Christian so that I could worship to them. So I understand what it means to have a song mean so much to you, and yet it could be totally different than the original message that the artist was putting out.
I just had a similar experience. This is super random, but I was watching Frozen 2 with my 4-year-old who's obsessed. Yeah. And the song, what's it called?
Into the Unknown?
No, it's the other one that she sings.
Not Doing the Right Thing, the next
Show
right
Yourself.
Thing.
Show Yourself. Yeah. I was literally like crying because I felt like God was like talking to me through the lyrics of that song, even though it's obviously not a Christian movie or whatever. But like, it was just so spiritually powerful. And yeah, like that, like just interpreting it through a different lens that's just purely me, it was a worshipful experience. It was really cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's why I like music, because you can have it mean something for you, and nostalgia is never wrong. That's the weird thing. Nostalgia is never wrong. So you're right. If you like something based on nostalgia, you could say that's a horrible song, or, you know, that note doesn't fit with that note, or that production was terrible. But when you think about how you felt because of something, it's right. It's good. It did what it was supposed to do. And so I don't want to decompose my music so much that I become like a jerk or holier than thou about saying, no, that's not what Reese was talking about, or that's not what I was talking about. I don't think that that's helpful for fans. I think it's more fun to see what they come up with. Mm-hmm.
So what gives you courage to put stuff out there that you aren't sure how it's going to be taken?
Well, I mean, at first, like I said, sometimes we wrote some lyrics and it's like, oh man, that is embarrassing. That's just terrible. if I overthink it, I could definitely get stuck. But my own personal courage comes from my own childlike spirit. I'm kind of just, I'm not a big processor. I'm just a doer. I just do, and I go and I say yes and I try things and I'm open-minded. And I think saying yes to several things in life has made me more brave, because you don't know what you're going to be good at. And yeah, you're going to fail at about 10 of them, but if you say yes to 30 things, you're going to be good at 20 other things. So I guess I'm just brave because I know that if I try my best, there are going to be 1 out of every 10 songs that make it. And then, you know, 1 out of every 10 songs that make a difference in somebody's life. So that gives me courage.
Well, I can say from personal experience that your work has affected our life in a positive way. So all of it.
It does mine too. That's the other weird thing that people don't realize. A lot of people feel that your music is something you put out there, but your music is something you put in there. My music is in my own heart. Our music is in my own heart. Our music was also growing me as a Christian. And, you know, when you listen to hymns, a lot of hymns, and especially in the verses, they're pretty much mini sermons. They're teaching you. They're growing you. They're challenging your point of view. And so for me to join Five Iron when I was 18 and a very new Christian and knowing nothing about theology and hardly anything about the Bible, through the years and through the lyrics, I grew and I began to understand certain tenets of theology. And so, yeah, that's the interesting thing too. It was part of my story.
So I was doing a random LinkedIn search and it did it say that you do like art curator as well?
I was. So for 6 years, I ran an art gallery in Scum of the Earth Church. And so that was amazing. Every single month, we had a different, well, I booked a different artist. And there were certain years that I had teams with me, but mostly I did it on my own. And I had taken a sociology of art class at a secular college. I had gotten a degree in sociology. And I was so drawn by the idea that art can be a neutral space to have spiritual conversations. And so the first 4 years, the art gallery was in its own space, right off of the art area in Denver, Colorado. And then later it was in this old church. We redid a part of the hallway to make me a gallery. And so I would have, anybody could be an artist. I would just have to see their portfolio. But sometimes I would do shows where I would ask people to depict visually a piece of art that would say, who am I to God and who is God to me? Or interview 10 people with these questions, all these different artists, and through those answers, depict a person through a piece of visual art. And then we started talking about genocide in Guatemala, and we talked about immigration. We had art shows that had to do with all sorts of different social justice. So we wouldn't just have a visual show. We'd have a band come and a poet come, or maybe a politician come. And it was full circle. And then also the church would be talking and dialoguing about these different cultural things that were happening. And so, yeah, running an art gallery was amazing for me.
So seeing art in two different areas, through music, which is not a physical medium per se, mm-hmm. and then art, which is a physical medium, do you mm-hmm. feel a difference with that, or is it a similar process for you?
I guess I would like to say I'm more open-minded when it comes to music. I wish I weren't. I wish I could say that I could recognize when a piece was good or bad, but I really do feel I'm not trained artistically, so I don't have that. And so I was usually using things at face value. And for the most part, good or bad, I would say to a person, if your story is powerful, if your methods are powerful, if your message is powerful, then your piece of art is good to me. Because I'm, to some degree, they both go together. I've made people cry, though. I mean, it sounds terrible, but there have been people that want to put a piece of art up, and I say, it's not ready. It's not done. And only because I could somewhat judge the spirit behind it was rushed, and that people, I wanted to call people to integrity. And I can say that to a song, too. I've made my husband really mad by saying, he'll show me a song, and I'll say, that's really good for a local band, which is brutal, right, for a musician. And he'll go downstairs and rewrite the whole song and come back, and I can just push him to make it better. Mm. So I don't know if I understand visual art as well as I do music, but I guess I can say that I can be a jerk when I need to be.
We all need people like that, though. It's an important
gift.
Them,
but we all need them, especially, and to be honest, I will say this, artists are their worst advocates. Because even, especially the ones that are really good, they may have an amazing piece of art that they took hours and hours and hours to create, and they want to ask for a tiny amount of price on it. And so part of my job was teaching people to say, no, you're worth more than that. And if we all ask for a tiny amount, that's all we're going to get. But if as a collective, we recognize the value that is placed on our time, we won't, you know, succumb to such low prices. And that goes musically too. So knowing what you're worth, artists just really have a hard time doing that.
I like this segue into one of the big questions that I'm asking everybody in this series. And identity is a huge thing I'm working through right now, finding mm-hmm. where do you put your security in your identity? And finding it's a hard thing, especially in art, because so much of yourself goes out into that. But to know that, like, even if you lose your ability to create art, you still have a secure identity. So do you struggle with that balance?
I learned something the hard way, which is, you know, when Five Iron was first around from 1995 to 2003, I would say the majority of my identity was placed in the ministry, in the energy, in the addictive highs of performance, everything having to do with that band, even living in a band house, eating, breathing, sleeping, Five Iron, and essentially being placed on a pedestal by people. And the problem with that is when people put you on a pedestal, you start to act like you deserve to be there. And then you have even further to fall. And the worst part is when you do it to yourself, when you think that you deserve to be on a pedestal. So now, so many years later, I've learned it's okay to be in a band. It's okay to celebrate it, to enjoy it, to relish in it. It's even okay to think that you're awesome. That's not bad because you work hard. What's bad is to believe the myth and the lie that this is all there is to life, that this is your identity. what you do rather than who you are. Who you are is so much more important, because after, you know, Five Iron broke up in 2003, I got married, I had kids. Life should have been good, but there was always this nagging, you know, like ministry will never be as good as it once was. It'll never reach the top tier like Five Iron did. And if you know the story, you know that we came back in 2011 and then it was bigger and better than ever. How could we? But see, God's story was not done. It was way bigger. And I still don't even know today, being almost 44 years old in Five Iron Frenzy, that doesn't even make any sense, right? Dennis just turned 50, our trombone player. And just to think, like, he joined Five Iron when he was 24. You don't know. And that's part of this process, is recognizing that our identity, it flows, it ebbs and it flows, and it's all seasonal. And just to enjoy it while you have it, enjoy it while you have it. And that's part of the reason I do this podcast. That's part of the reason that I put my message out there, because people are looking and care for whatever reason. And they may not in 10 years, but right now they do. And so if I can give God the glory and be an arrow to him, this is the time to do it.
Yes, I love that. So in what ways do you allow God to impact your creation in music and podcasting and all of that artistic things you're doing right now?
I wonder that too. I was thinking about that, and I was thinking about how I allow God to do it. And I guess in some ways, he's the breath of everything. I don't see creation and creativity as different than doing dishes, than going on a walk, than birthing a baby, you know? God is just there. God just is. And so I don't feel like I have to turn off a part of myself or turn on a part of myself to have God be part of the process. Or I'm trying not to. I try to just let it be natural. Because if I put too much pressure on myself to make it quote unquote spiritual, then I think I devalue other parts of my life. So I'm just trying to look at it a little bit more holistically right now.
Do you notice a difference in the way you create now versus when you were 18 and a new Christian?
Yeah, I guess so. I guess now I recognize that it's going to be painful and hurt when somebody doesn't like something. Like, I guess I could say that I can handle criticism a lot better. Like, it still hurts and it still stings, but I want to grow. I'm much more teachable now. Someone can tell me something is terrible, and I like that, because I would way rather put out something that we can all be proud of then have someone say, yeah, those are good lyrics. And then every time we want to play it live, they go, actually, we don't really like the lyrics. And we've made those mistakes before. And it's not worth it to not be honest. It's better to say, no, I think you can do better. I think we can do better. I think our fans deserve better. And also, I think part of it too is just recognizing that it should be fun. There is a heaviness and a weight to being in a punk rock band, punk rock Christian band, right? Like, there's a lot of horrible things happening in the world that we need to speak to, but also the balance between being spiritual and being silly. I think if anything, the message of Five Iron is that we have eight different people, eight different spiritual backgrounds, different political backgrounds, different, you know, socioeconomic backgrounds, everything to think of, but what can rise to the top can be the message of love. And if love comes out in the top, then I think that we're in a good place. And I think part of what Five Iron does is we say, you know, we're good at pointing the finger and saying, this is the status quo and it sucks. It's terrible. We should change things. But we're also good at looking in the mirror and being like, and this is how I am part of the problem.
So when you guys write, and I can't imagine, it's hard enough with two or three people, let alone eight. That's insane.
Very stressful. Yes.
So do you guys have like a specific, like, protocol is the only word coming to my mind, but like how you want God represented in your songs that you kind of all agree on?
We decided early on that we were going to be a democracy. So for our band, we don't have a leader. We don't have anybody calling the shots. And I guess I would say also, it's important to note that we all make the same amount of money, whether you write the songs or don't. We all have different jobs. And so the person who orders the merch, the person who designs the merch, the person who fills the van, the person who does the sound, the person who does the accounting, everybody has different jobs. Everybody is important. The way we write the songs is anybody can write a song and submit it. And basically when that song is written, there's only so much space, like I said, and usually the space that the horns and the vocals take up are kind of competing. So anybody else can write lyrics on them, and anybody else can write horn lines. And the main songwriter of that song does get veto power. So they can absolutely say, no, I don't, you know, scrap that part, start over. But other than that veto power, we bring all the lyrics forward and we have to agree on them. And we do have two members in our band that aren't Christians anymore. And they said early on, we are cool with having songs be about God and about hope because we trust each other. We know each other. We're family. And we take that, we don't take that very lightly. We take that with a lot of weight and we say, that's awesome. Thank you that we all can trust each other in this because the message is very much Christian and very much Christ-centered, and it always has been, and that won't change. And the way we can do that is, again, by letting love sit on the top.
They know you are Christians by your love. Yeah, that is.
Yes.
So when you create a song, do you come with lyrics first or a melody?
No, neither of those. Okay. You come with the, not a melody and not lyrics. It's the guitar or piano, just the bass part. Okay. And then on top of the bass part comes the melody. So the melody can change a lot. And usually just fake filler lyrics in the beginning. And then once you get the melody down, you can write the lyrics in there last. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Have any fake lyrics stuck around, like ad-libs?
It's funny. The Flowery Song, the whole reason the name of the Flowery Song is the Flowery Song is because that was filler lyrics. It just sounded flowery.
I don't know if this will get on the recording, but I'm super curious about like all those random bonus songs like Kitty Doggy and Kingdom of the Dinosaurs and Abraham Lincoln's Beard.
You asked it, sure.
Like, where do those just come around from, like, late nights and you're just tired and weird, silly things come out, or?
When we're in the studio, it's exhausting and you are stressed out. And so there's often times where you just have everything set up and just jam and rock out. And some of them, like Kitty Doggy, was just practice. Kingdom of the Dinosaur, again, we would just demo out our practice. And that's just chaos. Just how it really is for, you know, 80% of the time between songs.
Kingdom of the Dinosaurs is my boy's favorite thing to just run around and
Yeah, who's going to say rip off your face of the dinosaur? That's genius.
That is their favorite part.
One of the questions you haven't asked is when you feel the most self-conscious and what makes you want to quit?
Yes, that. Go right ahead.
Well, one of the times that I wanted to quit, it's probably the only time I really wanted to quit. And I remember distinctly because it was Thanksgiving. I don't remember the year. It was probably like 1999 or something. And we were driving, just leaving for a tour. And two of the guys in the band had gotten in a terrible fight, terrible argument. And we were at a truck stop in Wyoming and it was snowing. And I called my family. I have come from a huge Mexican-American family. And I called them on a pay phone in the truck stop. And they started passing around the phone on their end, you know, talking to grandma, aunts, uncles, cousins, brother, parents, and just feeling like I could call my dad right now. In an hour, he could be here and I could leave and I could go home. And then just looking at, you know, the freezing cold school bus we're living in with, you know, band members fighting and GoldenEye video games being played all hours of the night and, you know, allergies and all this stuff. And just thinking, why would I want to do that? I could quit. And the only reason I would want to quit would be because I missed my family. But when I really looked forward to what I had, there's no comparison. There's absolutely no comparison to getting on that stage and that one moment you feel when you are in one accord with the crowd and the band members. And you have first of all, like we've talked about the miracle of songwriting in the first place, you've written the song, you've recorded the song, you're performing the song, and you're in the pocket, which means everyone's playing the right way. And you see the crowd and they are interpreting the song in a new way. And that is just like, that is the cherry on top. That is the moment when you're like, that is why I do it. This is insane. And I really believe that that's the moment where I feel the closest to God. I love it. And so just thinking of that, it's like, put me in the cold van. Let's go. Let's get on the road.
So if someone was looking at all of the things that you've created ever, mm-hmm. What would you want them to take away about you?
I guess I would want them to see that there is one thread that goes through everything I do, whether it's the way I parent or the way I dance in my car, whether it's the way I put the shopping cart back or volunteer at the prison or rock out on stage, anything that I do, if they saw that there was one theme and one thread, it would be that this woman loves and understands the joy of the Lord. I guess the joy of the Lord is my honor, is the whole reason why I would do anything. And it's the same energy through everything. And so sometimes people get really annoyed with me because they're like, can you focus on one thing? Why do you have to podcast and garden and have kids and work at the prison and preach? And I'm like, I can't do one thing. I have way too much energy, way too many interests. Usually I have way too much time in my own mind. And it's hard to focus because I want to experience the Lord in all those areas. I want to experience him on stage rocking out, and I want to experience him, planting seeds. And so when people look back and they say, man, you stress me out, I'm like, don't be stressed out. It's the same thing, dude. It's the same energy all the way through. It's not any different.
So with every episode, I ask if I'm interviewing whoever to pick a verse because I like God to have the final word. And I just ask them to pick the verse that speaks to them in this particular area. So you have picked 1 Corinthians 2:9. Explain why.
Well, 1 Corinthians 2:9, and for so many years I knew it in my heart, but I couldn't say it correctly because I was kind of new at the Bible, and I would always say, God says, no eye has seen, no ear has heard, no mind can conceive of the plans God has for those who love him. And I could spout it off, but until I lived it, did I really understand? I remember saying it before I'd even lived it. I thought no eye had seen and I had seen. I thought no ear had heard and I had heard, and I wasn't even close. I had no idea what was coming. That's kind of what I talked about with five iron breaking up and then having 9 years to cultivate a beautiful family, having two children, a wonderful marriage, and starting Scum of the Earth Church and seeing that grow and grow and working there for 16 years and all the fruit of that. I still had no idea. And the interesting thing is I still feel that I don't know. I don't know what's coming. And what I think about the Lord that's fascinating is I always seem to get what I never knew to hope for. If you were to say, what do I want? I don't even know, but God knows. And he's going to unfold that for me in a way that is new every single day. And so I'm so excited to see what he's going to prepare for me because I love him. So that's basically what I wanted to say. And I'm excited to see for myself, and I'm excited to see for you and your family and little Leonore what God has unfolding for you.
Awesome. Thank you so much for taking the time to do this with me and
Oh, absolutely.
for all the sweat and tears and love that goes into all the stuff that you create. It really shows, and it's a blessing to so many people. So I am so excited to share this interview with people. I know I have a lot of people that are super jealous that I'm talking to you right now.
It's going to be more sweat and more tears and more insanity coming up, but we're not done.
Awesome. Good. 1 Corinthians 2:9. That is what the scriptures mean when they say, no eye has seen, no ear has heard, and no mind has imagined what God has prepared for those who love him.
This has been episode 30 of the Bridge of the Faithful podcast entitled Created to Create with musician Leonore Ortega Till. For show notes, go to botfpodcast.com/episode/30. You can find us on social media at Facebook or Instagram.